Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
We are back with another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez, and for the first time in a long time, it'll be Blake Schneider's in studio for the entire hour, though we did start a little bit late, so more like 52 minutes. That okay with you?
Blake? I thought you were talking to Marco. Yeah, that's great with me,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, Blake, is that okay with you too, Marco?
Yes, that's perfectly fine with me.
Well, we got, I wouldn't say a ton to go over today, but I think a big part of today's show, we dedicated that as usual to some Royals talk, some Chiefs talk, but we're going to start this show today talking some Royals baseball. And though you may not seem, it may not seem like a team that's 13-22 should generate any sort of discussion, the Royals split their doubleheader yesterday with the Chicago White Sox, but there is one key piece of information we have to get into, and that involves Brady Singer. Last night, returning from AAA, Omaha is the 27th man for the doubleheader, and he throws seven shutout innings with 9 Ks. He is the first Royal since Zach Greinke in 2009, his Cy Young year, to throw 7-plus innings with no walks and 9-plus strikeouts. So the Royals lost Game 1 3-0. John Heasley got the start. He went 5 innings, allowed 3 earned runs, the only 3 runs the White Sox got in the game, but the Royals' offense could not generate much once again. But in Game 2, they went 2-1. Singer was phenomenal. He really relied on that changeup. And I don't know if you saw this, Blake or Marco. Outside his locker, or I guess on top of his locker, there was a strip from the Sports Illustrated with just changeup in bold letters right above his locker. And Brady Singer said he didn't know who put it there, but he has an idea of who it might be. When you look at Singer's start from last night and throwing that changeup, finally relying on that changeup, should we look at it as, okay, his changeup really has developed, it's much better now, or is it more so the White Sox weren't even expecting him to throw that changeup last night?
I think it's probably a combo of the two. I think that you're going to have to expect a guy who they've harped on for a long time now, got to develop a third pitch, to at least throw it a few times. I remember, you know, last year, obviously, Singer was deathly afraid of it. Just didn't even want to mess with it, but they had to have expected it to come a little bit, but I think what really set the changeup up so much was the fact that his slider last night was on fire. And so when you're looking slider, because I think he threw the slider 32 times. He had 32 swings at his slider, 16 whiffs. I don't know how many foul tips, but I mean, his slider was all over the place and it was just raking these people down. So I don't know if it was just that they didn't expect it at all, or if it was more of a combo that the slider was hitting so well that any changeup, and on top of that, a solid changeup, was able to fool them.
Certainly, and that's what we've been wanting to see from Brady Singer for a long, long time. He has to develop that third pitch, and with his arm angle, number one, it's why his slider works so well and why his two-seam slash sinker works so well, is his arm angle is not funky, but it's tough to see the ball out of his hand when he's got movement like that. Now, you add in a third pitch like that changeup, Brady Singer's ceiling moves from a fourth or fifth type of starter to a top three, maybe top two guy, at least in Kansas City. I don't know about elsewhere, but that was a good sign for Brady Singer. Now, everybody wanted to blow up on Twitter last night because he was optioned back to Omaha. Listen, that's a procedural move. He has to go back. I guarantee he didn't even leave Kansas City.
He was the extra man for because of the doubleheader, 27th man. It's unfortunate, but
it looks bad, but it can't be anybody else.
Yeah, I thought Briscoe had the funniest tweet. He said, "Man, Brady Singer must have hated Omaha to come out and put a performance on like that, knowing he had to go back, just saying, hey, somebody else has to go down because it's time for Singer." And honestly, I'm sure that we could make a list real quick of people that we would rather see down other than Brady Singer, especially after last night's performance, because that was the Brady Singer that I saw from like 2 years ago. The determination, just the almost a machine on the mound. And as we both know, he's very intense. extremely intense. So he was just stone cold, dead face killer on the mound last night. So I think after that, there's no way that the Royals can logically keep him in Omaha for that long.
No, and if this was a move, it's not, as long as he's not injured or anything, which it didn't seem like he would be. Plus, he was in the post-game interviews yesterday for a long time. There's no way they shipped him off to Omaha. I guarantee you he's staying in Kansas City. They say he's in Omaha, but it frees up a roster spot for the next couple of days if you want to bring up another bullpen arm. But here's the reality is that when Brady Singer returns, Carlos Hernandez is gone. I mean, he is going to be going to Omaha. Yes. He's going to have to work on things. There's no other spot for him on this roster. Now, Salvi went on the IL yesterday. Sebastian Rivero took his spot. But in terms of pitchers, right, a pitcher has to be the casualty here. There is nobody else on this roster that needs to go down to Omaha more than Carlos Hernandez. He's slated to start on Thursday. I give it about a 15% chance of happening. I mean, if the Royals do start him tomorrow after Greinke goes tonight, once again, it's like you're just throwing away another game. You're just throwing away another start because you know what you're going to get from Carlos Hernandez.
You're actively knowing, chalking that one up as an L.
Yeah, that's what they did in Colorado on Saturday. They gave him another start, and it went just as poorly as you expected it would. This isn't to say that Carlos Hernandez's career is over. He's still got great stuff, but he has more walks than strikeouts this year. His ERA is north of 9. He hasn't won a game yet. There's not been any start this year where you looked at Carlos Hernandez and said, you know what, he was really on. That's a great start moving in the right direction. Because he needs to be that guy that works down in Omaha and probably works out of the bullpen. I don't think Carlos Hernandez can be tried as a starter anymore. I don't think his stuff can really move over into being a starter. He's got triple-digit stuff. That's better suited for the bullpen. It's more about command with him.
Command and longevity and consistency. I mean,
there's no consistency. There hasn't been any consistency. He can't work deep into games. Even when he was on last year, the most you could get out of Carlos Hernandez was probably 6, which is fine. I'd take 6 innings out of any of these starters on any given day in the rotation.
Yeah, that'd be on the upside.
Absolutely. And especially for the 4 and 5 guys, which the Royals haven't been able to get all year. They couldn't get it with Bubic. They couldn't get it with Hernandez. They're trying to get it now with Singer and Heasley. Heasley looked fine yesterday. Singer was lights out. Now, you brought up guys that you'd rather see in Omaha, and I think we all know who you're talking about, or, for that matter, not even on the roster anymore. The Royals are not scoring runs. They haven't been scoring runs all year, and we want to blame a handful of people in this lineup. First off, it was Whit Merrifield starting slowly. Then maybe you saw Nicky Lopez trending in the wrong direction, but it always feels like it's been two guys. It's been Ryan O'Hearn. It's been Carlos Santana. You have your choice.
Yeah, at least Merrifield has come around. He was batting, 137 about a week and a half ago? Now he's 207. That's a huge jump. Whit is finally starting to feel a little bit better there in the box. That's a guy who's always been consistently hitting. So was it worrisome? Yeah. But kind of just like Salvador Perez, I mean, he has not been batting that well this year at all. I'm not really worried about it. At the end of the year, Salvi's going to be probably back around 270, 275. I don't think he's probably going to have another, 49 home run year. But, the power is still there, still a good player. It's just kind of weird slump with the beginning of the year, especially when you add Perez and Witt, two guys that are usually pretty dang good with the bat. If I had my pick to see somebody in Omaha,
of those two, who do you want to be the odd man out here?
I want O'Hearn and Omaha. I
think he may be out of options. I think if you set him down, he may be DFA'd.
Well,
he'd clear waivers.
That's fine. I don't mind. Because you get him in Omaha and Carlos Santana, thank you for your service, sir. You may now exit the room.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. What is the reason why they're sticking? I know a lot of people are asking that. After what you saw yesterday, what you've seen for 2 months, what is the reason both of them are still hitting, not only for this lineup, they're hitting cleanup?
I want to know, real quick, what's the record for most players left on base by a single player in one game? What is the record? Do we know? Marco, are you going to be able to find that stat? Record for most players left on base in a single
game. It's probably something absurd, like in a 18 or 19 inning game, like 17.
Yeah.
Something in a 9 inning game, that's something to wonder about.
Because yesterday, Ryan O'Hearn left eight. Now, granted, this is not all on Ryan O'Hearn, but a quarter of them were. 8 batters left on base. I think total for yesterday, the Royals in 2 games left 23 men on base. They left the bases loaded at least once. They left runners on the corners multiple times, runners on second multiple times, and it all came from having a leadoff guy on and then strikeout, and then pop up. I'm like, I don't understand, and I know that wasn't the original question, I don't think. But
no, that's adding on.
The question was, is why is Santana and O'Hearn continued to be in the lineup? Santana, I have no idea. Do they just not trust somebody to play first base? And honestly, I don't really care who plays first base because defense isn't the Royals' problem.
No.
It's hitting the ball. I don't care if you have a average defensive first baseman. If you want to put Dozier over there at first, I would much rather have Dozier in the lineup. Get somebody else out. I mean, literally anybody is better at any position. You could put MJ Melendez at first. I don't care. Now, obviously you won't now because Salvi's on the IL, but it doesn't matter. Hell, Bobby Witt can play first. I don't care. As long as Carlos Santana is not in the roster, especially because what happens is you get Witt on base, okay? You get Benintendi on base. Both those guys are hitting. And then, Carlos Santana comes up. Or then you'd have Dozier come up, and there's nobody for him to even hit in because usually Santana was the one who got an out or a double play.
What they didn't realize, I mean, they had to have realized this at one point, when Salvi apparently was playing through this thumb sprain, right? So that's what I think we can point to a lot of his struggles at, is that it was a thumb sprain. The Royals did him no favors, right? Because Salvi, who is a free swinger, got no protection in the lineup.
No protection.
They put Santana and O'Hearn behind him every single time. And the one thing with Santana is Santana's had a phenomenal career. He killed the Royals for many years, a decade with Cleveland. But what made Carlos Santana so great is that when he was in his prime, when he was in the height of his career, when he was a power hitter hitting 30-plus home runs, OBP north of 360, 370, pitchers had to throw around him, which is why he could walk so much. It's because you don't want to groove one down the middle. Now at this point in Carlos's career, they can groove one down the middle because he can't hit it anymore. He doesn't have the pop anymore. And that's not to just keep harping on Carlos Santana, because here's the thing. Father Time's undefeated. We don't want to say, he's a terrible, awful player. He's had a good career. He's just aged.
He's had a great career.
He's 36, 37. Stop trying to blame a 37-year-old for all the offensive struggles.
And they're not putting him in any situation to succeed, you said. I don't know why hasn't he just bumped down to the bottom of the lineup? Because I promise you, Nicky Lopez in a position like that is gonna at least get on base. Then you can bring up Dozier. Hell, I'd put Michael A. Taylor there. Right. I mean, yes, those are bottom of the lineup guys, but right now, he's not even really a bottom of the lineup guy. He's a guy you should be sitting on the bench. But I just don't know. I think there's a lot of – Twitter's blowing up right now, calling for the heads of everybody.
They're furious.
Of everybody. it doesn't matter. Cal Eldridge, in my opinion, and I think yours too, and I'm assuming yours too, Marco, he should have been gone two or three years ago. After I heard, I don't know what to tell you, I think that was a good sign you should have been gone. I think I'm not on this camp. I think there's a lot of people calling. They're already tired with the Matheny experience. I'm not quite there yet, but there's a lot of questionable decisions.
Well, I always go back with the Matheny criticism. I go back to I always quote Moneyball. That's the one baseball movie.
It's one of the greatest baseball movies ever.
It's phenomenal. Now, I love Major League and Bull Durham and all that, but that's a different genre of baseball movie. Yeah. With Moneyball, here's what I like to compare Matheny to. When Billy Bean goes into the office and is talking with Art Howe, and he says, you're going to play Hatterberg at first, right? Not Pena. And Art Howe basically says, your job is to put the team on the field. I manage them to the best of my ability.
I own the lineup.
Basically, I own the lineup. And I feel like with the lineup that has been given to Mike Matheny, it's not really a winning lineup. So if you're going to be mad at the output here, I mean, Mike Matheny's not done a great job managing this lineup because he has put Ryan O'Hearn and Carlos Santana cleanup. But the reality is, who else is there to put cleanup? Right, there's nobody hitting well enough to say, okay, he's our cleanup guy. Maybe Benintendi, but I also want Benintendi in the two-hole because he's one guy that can move Whit Merrifield over when Whit Merrifield's hot and he's getting on base. There's just not many guys you can move around here. There's too many young pieces. However, there's absolutely zero excuse.
I mean, I think if you're hitting cleanup, why not put Dozier there? Why not?
Probably because in this
271 batting average right now, it's one of the best you have in your entire lineup. He's clearly the best hitter.
I think they probably are going with the righty-lefty, righty-lefty. And if Salvi was hitting third, now it's Bobby
Witt. Well, hey, if we're quoting Moneyball, I don't care about righty-lefties. I don't care about righty-lefties.
Well,
I just want guys who get on base.
Marco, in this spot, I know that these are major league players. They're not trying to get out. They're trying to improve this team. But at the end of the day, you look at it and you say, time has come up. Right? Dayton Moore literally just said 2 days ago, and I think he got his words mixed up because I believe the word is patience, but he says everybody has accountability until that accountability is up or that accountability is run out. It's patience. Mm-hmm. We should have lost patience with a cleanup hitter having a WRC plus damn near 20.
Yeah.
I mean, bottom of the league. But the Royals think those are the run producers. I mean, you look around the league, there may not be a worse cleanup hitter than the ones we have in Kansas City. Why is the leash so long? Why are the Royals looking at this and saying, Vinny Pasquantino, you're not ready. Nick Prado, you're not ready, because we have to give everyday at-bats to a guy we're paying $9 million to at first base, or a guy that's been on the roster for 4 years and has kind of been the same guy since 2019?
Yeah, well, to answer about Santana, Matheny, I think, said in that a couple of days ago when both Piccolo and Moore spoke, he said that, you know, they're paying Santana to play first base, and so that's why we keep seeing him in the lineup when healthy in recent games, because he is the guy that they're paying to play at first. Now with Ryan O'Hearn, I have no idea, and this is where probably got to do some reading up on it, but it's not like an arbitration or we got to play this guy a certain amount of times to avoid, I don't know, because baseball with contracts is always just so weird to me. There's just so many different factors that go into it. There's no commitment clause or anything like that, or a reason as to why they had to keep putting him up there or to avoid something by keeping him on the active roster. Because I feel like there's stuff like that in baseball.
With service time and stuff, but he's far past the service time at this point.
Yeah, so it's just I don't have an answer for you. But I can tell you right now, as fans, they have the right to be upset. I don't want to hear the preaching, the sermon of patience. I don't want to hear that being preached to Royals fans when you're the person that said 2022, this was supposed to be the year of competitiveness, and day in and day out, we continue to see the Royals put out a lineup that makes us question whether or not they want to be competitive right now, because God, yesterday's day game, man, I wanted to throw myself into one of those like industrial size metal fans.
I'm with you,
because it's like just pinch hit him, man. Ryan O'Hearn, third time up bat, bases are loaded. Santana gets out, O'Hearn's up with one out. We know what's gonna happen here because we've seen it so many times before. We saw it in the first two at bats. It's one of those things where it's like just make the move. Just make the move. But no, you continue to just let it happen. And that seventh inning was very frustrating, man. Very frustrating.
That was the worst inning of the year.
Because although Heasley gave up 3 runs, I think he still did a really good job for a kid that made his second start of the season.
He had to be perfect yesterday.
He did.
Even if he was perfect, the Royals didn't give him any damn runs.
I'll tell you what, though. What's really fun about this team that I really enjoy watching is the defense. And we got to see them put on a performance yesterday with Heasley on the mound. But and that's exactly it. He let the defense play. I saw a little bit of Greinke in him in that way, where he's trusting his defense while on the mound and just not stressing about what he throws, because he knows what's behind him. Now, 3 runs, I think you should be able to ask your offense to get you 3 runs each game, I feel like. Now, with the Royals, I know we have the lower expectations, but when you put so many runners on base and in scoring this position especially, it's just, how do you not get 3 runs out of that?
And sorry, Blake.
No,
one thing to say about that, but the anger of game one yesterday. And at one reason, yes, the bottom of the seventh, I wanted to throw myself through an industrial fan like you did. I don't know if I had more anger for that or when Hunter Dozier was sent home on a shallow bloop single to left field. Routine, by the way. And Hunter Dozier's not Jerod Dyson. Right? And Hunter Dozier, poor Hunter Dozier, he knew he wasn't going to score. His mind was telling him as he's getting to third base, all right, I'm slowing down here. Let's bring up Nicky Lopez. It's still 0-0. We have actually gotten base runners today off Dylan Cease. It wasn't like that was the first hit of the game. Hunter Dozier was doing the right thing. And all of a sudden, Vance Wilson's waving his ass home. And Dozier's like, well, I guess I have to go. But he also had the one problem is you either got to blow through the stop sign or you got to commit one way or another. And he was kind of in the middle of, I shouldn't go, but I'm being told to go emphatically by Vance Wilson. And he's thrown out by 30 feet.
I don't understand that because as a player, you know the scenario in which you're in with your speed. And when you see that ball pop off the bat, you typically know, okay, I think I can leg this out or I can't. In my mind, Hunter Dozier should have basically given the middle finger to Vance Wilson metaphorically and saying, I'm not going, kidding me? Because how many times have we seen Hunter Dozier get yomped at the plate by 20 feet this year? I've seen it personally four separate times, and it's starting to get extremely annoying. At first, I thought it was on Dozier. I think at least two of them were. The other two, Vance Wilson's waving him around. I'm like, Dozier is not that fast. Not that fast to where you can get in on a shallow bloop from second. It's not how that's going to work. At that point, he should have just been like, Coach, I'm not listening to you. I'm sorry. But like, at what point are we going to take into account this player who's played X amount of years in the league now, is a vet, knows the scenario, and he's like, nah, I've got to take this into my own hands. Scoring. Just like if Patrick Mahomes was to call an audible and Andy Reid didn't call it because he sees something else, that's on him. That needs to be on Dozier, too. He's got to be like, I'm not going. We're in a scenario. We got to get guys on base. I can't. You're never supposed to get thrown out at home from that far.
That feeling yesterday, maybe not to the same magnitude. I had that same anger of, why the hell did you just do that to end the AFC divisional round when the Chiefs ran that speed option with Blake Bell? The Jerick McKinnon.
Oh, God. When everybody saw it coming.
Third and one.
Everybody saw it.
I mean, that's the type of like, what the hell just happened? I was so blown away. And by the way, I saw a hilarious tweet, and I think it kind of closes out the argument forever. That's exactly what would have happened if the Royals sent Alex Gordon in Game 7. Exactly what would have happened. And Gordon's slower than Dozier. And can you imagine now sitting there in Game 7, you see the ball coming into home plate, and Gordon's not even in the screen yet? Can you imagine being in a pickle to end Game 7 of the World Series, or not even getting a chance to slide? I mean,
with Perez coming off the bat,
horrific. And that's what everybody out there that says, oh, well, at least would have wanted to test the arm. By the way, Brandon Crawford's one of the best shortstops in baseball, at least during that time, and one of the most accurate. And I think Luary Garcia, I keep getting his name wrong, Luary Garcia is not a great second baseman. He's a good second baseman, and he threw a missile home. Major league infielders know how to make the throw home, especially when they know the runner's not very fast.
So I'm just harping back to the comment I made earlier about Michael A. Taylor, joking about him in the
he'd be fine
in the cleanup spot. Third best average on the team. Oh, now, boy. Granted, that average is .238. When you have seven of your regular starters, now obviously we're rotating right field and first base quite a bit, so these don't count. But when you have seven of your starters, and of that seven, only two of them are hitting above .240. The other five, .238, .215, .215, .206, .204. I've seen some bad baseball from the Royals and bad averages. This might be the worst I've seen the Royals' collective average since some of those 100 lost years.
I think this year is, I keep waiting and waiting for that offensive outburst, and they've had it. They had it in Colorado, but it always happens in Colorado for other teams. They had one game against St. Louis. They had one game against Texas. It's about finding a series in normal air, not thin air like Coors Field, to get them going. And I don't know right now if this current lineup can, because you still have so many black holes in the lineup, and they're right in the meat of your order. There needs to be some changes offensively. I think they are coming. They're probably coming near the end of the month, because you know the Royals are smart, right? The Royals are a organization. Wait, they are smart in some capacity that they can't look. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to look at Ryan O'Hearn and Carlos Santana and say, you know what, I'm still going to give them the full year because, number one, we're paying him $9 million to play first base. The New York Mets ate $40 million in dead money to cut Robinson Cano because they thought, there's no way in hell we're putting him in this lineup. We'll eat $40 million just so we don't have to put him in the lineup. The Royals are being iffy about $9 million being $8 million. You know the move didn't work out. I don't mind the move at the time. When they brought in Carlos Santana, I thought,
oh,
man, Royal killer. This is a great kind of a Kendrys Morales type of deal. Where
he served his purpose at the time, and now it's time to go.
Now it's time to go. And you have two guys down in AAA that, though they're not tearing the cover off the ball, neither was MJ Melendez. This is the perfect no-pressure situation to come up and play because they're not taking over for a top-five first baseman in the American League. They're taking over for, statistically and offensively, the worst first baseman in baseball. That's I'm not trying to harp on it. It's just they statistically right now, with their offensive numbers, have the worst first baseman in baseball. Almost said football there. There's no pressure for Nick Prado or Vinny Pasquantino to come up and be the superstar. They just have to be better than what O'Hearn or Carlos Santana is giving you. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll switch into some NFL, talking some Chiefs football. You are listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN, Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN, Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez and Blake Schneiders. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also, a shout-out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with those nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. As we like to do every show, we want to give as many updates as we can with the Kansas City Chiefs, maybe some predictions, some preseason previews, position battles. But where do we sit right now with this current Kansas City Chiefs team? Our confidence level. Earlier in the week, we went through the edge position, right? Our confidence level with that group. You know, Melvin Ingram not available anymore. Guys like Jadeveon Clowney, Robert Quinn still are. Asking price will be pretty high. The price tag on Jadeveon Clowney will be high. Are you comfortable with this edge-rushing group with George Karlaftis starting and Frank Clark opposite of him? Now I want to switch it over to this offensive group. Yes, the one that no longer has Tyreek Hill, the human cheat code, the cheetah, to solve all their problems. Now your wide receiver group includes Juju Smith-Schuster. It includes Marquez Valdes-Scantling. It includes Mecole Hardman. It includes Sky Moore. It includes Josh Gordon, and my guess would be it also includes Justin Ross. Blake, and then Marco, I want to get your takes on both of this. On a scale of 1 to 10, we did this exact same thing for the edge rushing group. Scale of 1 to 10, without Tyreek Hill, what is your confidence level that this wide receiver group can fill that void and still be a top three productive wide receiving core in the NFL?
So I'm probably overly optimistic because the way I view the Tyreek Hill situation is that last year, the Kansas City Chiefs, and when I talk about wide receivers, I'm not talking Kelce, so don't think that I'm not adding him into this conversation, but we're strictly talking wide receiver positions. Kelce is clearly the number one, number two. Yet last year, he was number two, number one, really, interchangeable with Tyreek Hill. This year, he's clearly the number one receiver that you have, or pass catcher that you have. He's the security blanket for Mahomes' career, and that will not change. He's also, six straight seasons with 1,000 yards. So, not talking about Travis Kelce in this conversation. In my opinion, the wide receiver room is head and shoulders better and above what they were last year. Last year, it was Tyreek Hill, then a long list of nothing, then really just Mecole Hardman and Byron Pringle, and then you sprinkled in a little bit of everybody else. This year, you don't have Tyreek Hill, but you do have a former 1,700-yard season receiver, Juju Smith-Schuster, who's played with a dying Ben Roethlisberger, the corpse of Ben Roethlisberger's monster from Frankenstein out in Pittsburgh with a horrific offense. still getting it done. He was hurt, I think, for 1 year. Comes in here, brand new system, best quarterback in the league, best offensive-minded head coach in the league. That's already an improvement. Then you bring in MVS, okay? Speedster, played on a really good team last year, but, I mean, Davante Adams was an absolute monster, so he probably, if he would have played on any other team, he probably would have had more looks and more yards. Even though he was playing with Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams was the magnet on that team, and that's who everybody looked for. But you bring in two guys now that are over 6 foot tall. You got 6'1", Juju Smith-Schuster. You have 6'4", MVS. Now you also bring in Sky Moore in the draft. Biggest hands in the draft. Excellent pass catcher. Does not drop the ball. MVS also doesn't drop the ball. Guess who also doesn't drop the ball? Juju Smith-Schuster. You got in three guys that are very sure-handed. They can all catch. Speedster, great guys who can go over the middle. Sky Moore, who can pretty much do a little bit of everything. Is he going to be the blazingest speed? No. Doesn't mean he's slow, but he's not going to be beating people off the line like Tyreek Hill. And he probably won't be beating guys off the line like MVS. But he's an excellent route runner. I've watched a bunch of his tape, and in my opinion, this is going to be a stretch for some people. I think it can be very accurate. He reminds me of a Cooper Kupp / Adam Thielen type of route runner. Guys who just know how to create separation in the smallest of windows, get open, and catch the ball when it's thrown to them. Oh, you also still have a Josh Gordon from last year. I know many people have been off the Josh Gordon train. I know Sterling always, he is not happy when I bring this up. I'm telling you, Josh Gordon being in the league for now a full season, zero issues, zero off-field issues, been in a offense now with Andy Reid for an entire season, there hopefully is still something left in the tank. The ceiling there, I think, could be high still. 6'4", 220. What they've done in the Chiefs room is added height. Then you bring in Justin Ross. You still have Mecole Hardman. I think Mecole Hardman is going to be really good this year. They saw him finally get into some gadget plays last year where they were deliberately trying to get him the ball. Mecole Hardman is a guy where if you make him a part of the offense, he becomes a part of the offense. He's not a guy that just fits into the mold wherever he can. He was also getting a lot of things taken away because Tyreek Hill was also the guy that they were trying to get the ball to. When they were trying to get the ball to Mecole Hardman, he finally did things. So, but they had to game plan for him. They can't just have him be a random number two. You bring in Justin Ross. I think this guy's got a lot of hype to him. He would have been probably would have been a second or third rounder in the draft had it not been for the injury. Apparently only four teams even looked at him. What they've done is they've gotten guys who don't drop the ball. They've gotten some speed at more than just one position or two different people. And they've got taller wide receivers, bigger bodied wide receivers. So overall, I think the wide receiver group is head and shoulders better than the wide receiver group last year. It's just, you're never going to replace Tyreek Hill. He's an anomaly. That's like saying, oh, we need to go draft a Randy Moss. That's not happening. You don't do that. So, sad that you don't have Tyreek, yes. Better position group, 100%.
Certainly. It was so top heavy last year. And you want to say that I specifically allude to the AFC Championship game. When they eventually were able to take Tyreek Hill away, and Travis Kelce for that matter, as best they could, the Chiefs really couldn't turn to anybody. And though it's going to be easier to shut down Juju one-on-one than it is Tyreek Hill, or to bracket Juju than it is the Tyreek Hill, the Chiefs now have other options where they didn't last year. Byron Pringle, hey, credit to him, he was fine for what he was. DeMarcus Robinson in the Super Bowl season, he was fine for what he was. But I go back to that last possession the Chiefs had in the season, and it was they tried to force the ball twice to DeMarcus Robinson. Twice with the game on the line in overtime. I know why they did it. They tried to catch the Bengals off guard with going, you're not guarding DeMarcus Robinson in this. Nearly picked off. Threw it to Tyreek Hill in double coverage, picked off. The Chiefs panicked. Patrick Mahomes panicked. And something we don't say a lot about Patrick Mahomes, but I think having this more well-balanced group can take some of that pressure and some of that stress where I got to get it to one guy. Because you still have Travis Kelce, your security blanket. Yeah. But now you got two established wide receivers with this group in Juju and MVS. Marco, now for your thoughts on this, when you look at your confidence level, 1 to 10, it's not as top heavy. You don't have Tyreek Hill.
Oh, I didn't give my rating. I just realized that.
What is it? Number, scale.
Scale of 1 to 10. I'm going to give, I guess last year I would have ranked the receivers room with the addition of Tyreek Hill at about a 7-4.
Yeah, they didn't have a 2, so
but
I'm with you.
They didn't have a 2, yeah. This year I'm going to give him about, I'm going to give him a 7-9 until proven otherwise.
I think 7-9 is fair. 7-9 to 8.3 would probably be in my range.
Yeah.
Marco, is it? Are you in that same boat? Are you lower? Are you much higher? Is it a 10 out of 10?
The team this year, the wide receiver.
You like better group? Than last year's?
I mean,
if this was a Dave Portnoy pizza rating scale,
right,
what would
right,
you give
right.
last year's room and what would you give this year's room?
I would give last year's room, I'd give it a 7 also because you had Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. I know Travis Kelce's technically in the tight end room, I guess, but he's a pass catcher. This room right now, maybe I do like this wide receiver room a lot more than, or not a lot more than last year, though, without even having seen him play. Because I think that this is a wide receiver group that is going to be able to complement each other and what they do best. You still have the speed that can beat you over the top with McColl and Valdez-Scantling. You have the slot receivers in Juju Smith and Sky Moore. And on top of that, you still throw in Travis Kelce into the mix. So I think that this year is going to be a very different-looking offense. Brett Veach just said it. It's going to be different because it has to be. You don't have the same pieces that you had last year. You improved, you upgraded in certain areas of it, but at the end of the day, you still lost one of the best receivers in the NFL in Tyreek Hill. He's not replaceable, but the offense is changeable, and I think you guys had said it right all along, just right there. It's going to open up a lot of more things. It's going to open up McCole Hardman. We're going to now see a game plan focused around him, but maybe a game plan that's focused on him is still one where you have to worry about Juju. Still got to worry about Marquez. And on top of that, at the end of the day, you still got to worry about the best tight end in the NFL. So I think that you can do a lot more with the pieces now than you could last year.
I think this situation is essentially like if you guys are Office fans, if you've ever seen the launch party edition. I think last year's room was Pizza by Alfredo, and I think this year's room is Alfredo's Pizza Cafe. Vastly different. Same vastly team, different. same name, vastly different.
Thanks, Kevin, on that analysis. Now, before we go to break, I saw this yesterday because I was sent this by a buddy, another Chiefs fan, but I love Good Morning Football. Good Morning Football is a phenomenal show. It's really it's right up there, actually. It is the best show to watch on NFL Network. It's the best football show to watch, aside from maybe the pregame shows on CBS and Fox in the morning on Sundays, which I can't wait for again, and Red Zone. But Michael Robinson, he's on Good Morning Football, still a great guy on the panel.
The real Mike Robb.
Yeah, the real Mike Robb. This list he had, though, I'm sorry, I just can't disagree with. And it's tough because, you know, in Kansas City, we have bias from time to time. But he put a top five quarterback list for the two-minute drill. Number five, he's got Matt Stafford. Number four, he's got Russell Wilson. Number three, he's got Tom Brady. Number two, he has Patrick Mahomes. And number one, he has Josh Allen.
That's so
Did Patrick
weird.
Mahomes not get a team from the 25-yard line to field goal range in 13 seconds against Josh Allen?
I think he did it twice in 2 minutes.
Yeah. Also in overtime, yeah, went easily down the field against the best defense in the NFL.
He scored two touchdowns in 2 minutes, which is one more touchdown than Josh Allen scored in 2 minutes.
Also, I got to question this list because we look at longevity, too. I mean, is Tom Brady not the best all-time quarterback in the two-minute drill?
Yeah.
So are we going this version of Tom Brady or Tom Brady in general?
I think they probably took the current version. Okay. I would also put Stafford over Wilson.
Yeah, I think Stafford would earn that right, too, at least recently and even some of his years in Detroit.
Yeah.
But, hey, Josh Allen is a great quarterback. He is phenomenal. He is an all-worldly talent, and when we are 40 and 50 years old, we'll look back at this era and we will vividly remember Josh Allen being potentially a future Hall of Famer. We'll just remember Josh Allen. But I don't know in the NFL if there is another quarterback out there that has this much preseason hype, that has not won an MVP, that has not won a Super Bowl, that has not won an AFC Championship game. You look at Josh Allen, God damn, is there a lot of pressure on him. Best team in the league, according to every PFF ranking, according to everybody's list. Best quarterback, best in the two-minute drill, best weapons, best defense. I mean, they are setting Josh Allen up to fail once again. I mean, seriously, he has to go undefeated and win the Super Bowl for them to live up to these expectations. I have seen so many lists out there that the Bills are by far and away the favorite. Josh Allen by far and away is the best quarterback in the league. That's a lot of hype for somebody that has not been that successful in the postseason.
Especially when you have to run into the buzzsaw of the Kansas City Chiefs every year.
Yeah, and they'll do it again in Week 6, and they very well could do it once again in the postseason. I do hope, though, just for a storyline aspect, I hope the Chiefs have to go to Buffalo this year in the postseason. And, man, if they win in Buffalo, I mean, you are seriously looking at a cursed franchise. One lost 4 Super Bowls in a row. Only one of them was really close.
That city might implode on themselves.
Oh, man, I can't. See, we thought that the New England and the Tom Brady treachery, the horrific 2019 AFC title game, the Super Bowl, we think, oh, man, Tom Brady is that guy. But it was two different teams. Can you imagine losing to New England every single year on the doorstep of the Super Bowl, after not winning one? God, have the Bills won one ever? Can't think now.
No,
I don't think so.
In the mid-90s, when they went to four in a row in Buffalo. Oh, man, that would, if they went into Orchard Park.
Well, and what is it with, and I know we got to take a break here, but what is it with the NFL analyst? They just want Josh Allen to be better than Patrick Mahomes when he has shown that he's, this is not slander on Josh Allen, but the accolades and record prove that Patrick is better than Josh Allen.
Yeah,
and yet they are just, they want this. They're like, if we say this long enough and loud enough, it'll just be true.
Because the Bills still are kind of that, I hate saying this word for them because they're a really good team, but they're kind of the lovable losers.
Yeah.
Now, everybody wants to see them get back there because they're a cursed franchise, and Josh Allen is not a villain yet. Patrick Mahomes is a villain in this league. He is a villain because he's beaten a lot of teams. He's dominated his division. He's already won a Super Bowl. Kansas City fans can be cocky. The team can be cocky. They don't want to see the Chiefs win anymore. They want to see the Bills do that. And maybe they get it this year. But, man, if they fell to Kansas City once again, talk about that city. That city is going to be in just despair for not only a couple months of the offseason, for multiple years. If it's 3 years in a row, the Bills fall to Kansas City. We're going to take a one-minute break, and when we come back, we'll finish up with some fact or fiction. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. This is Blake's song.
I was just about to say, this is normally what you play when I'm on the show.
We got to enter before he gets on the show. We might have to give him that little intro every single time. But welcome back in to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez and Blake Schneiders, who will be joining the show every Wednesday for the full hour. I don't know what we call it. Can't be Schneiders Wednesdays. Sterling does Briscoe Fridays. It's not, it
really
has a good ring.
Yeah.
Well, it has some kind of a ring to it. Do you have a name you'd like to go by?
Yeah, we can do, we can do the Schneiders Sit Down.
Schneiders Sit Down. Schneiders Sit Down.
Sitting with Schneiders.
All right, don't mix those two up.
It's like an Oprah talk show thing.
Coming every Weenster.
No. Good try, though, Marco. I like it. You're taking swings. You're taking hacks out here.
We'll get it here. We'll get our own intro for it, too. And we'll have to use that song.
I'll record my own song.
Oh, there you go.
There we go.
If you want to have your own little ditty there, that's what you can call it. Well, it is the end of the show, which means it's time for some fact or fiction. 5 questions, 5 takes in under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
All righty, fact or fiction. Brady Singer starts for the rest of the season.
I will go fact on this. I mean, they optioned him down. Again, it's because he was the 27th man. He will be back up, and there's no reason in hell. Even if he struggles a little bit, he's got to be there because there's nobody else that can take his job. There's nobody else in the minor leagues right now that should be able to take Brady Singer's job. He is a top 2 starter in this rotation when he's on. I'm going to go fact on this. He will be in the rotation for the rest of the year.
Fact or fiction, Ryan O'Hearn is the first DFA'd player, not Santana.
I'm going fact.
I'll go fact on this, because if Mike Matheny's going to say they're paying Carlos Santana to be their first baseman, they're not paying Ryan O'Hearn anything. And also, if you want to look at it, Ryan O'Hearn would clear waivers.
Yeah.
They could still keep him in Omaha. He'd be off the 40, man. But at that point, it's just depth in Omaha. So I'll go fact on this, just because the Royals are always skeptical about cutting guys with a somewhat big contract, even though Santana's not. It's less than $10 million. I think O'Hearn will be the first casualty of this roster.
Fact or fiction, the Philadelphia Eagles win the NFC East.
We were just talking about this on the break. Because they added James Bradbury to a one-year $10 million deal, that is. They got a good cornerback group. Jalen Hurts, I think, is a he was my fantasy quarterback for a couple of weeks. They added A.J. Brown. They have Devontae Smith. They're going to be scary.
And they have J.J. Arcega-Whiteside as well.
Yep, and Miles Sanders still at running back.
Yeah, so they have Darius Slay, James Bradbury, Fletcher Cox, Derek Barnett, Brandon Graham?
Yeah, I think so.
Brandon Graham. Jordan Davis they just drafted. They just drafted a linebacker, N'Kobe Dean. So definitely going fact. I think the Eagles win that division.
Fact or fiction, Juju Smith-Schuster has over 1,000 yards receiving this year.
I'll go fiction. I think very close to it, but Kelce will be, the only pass catcher above 1,000 yards this season.
I'll go fiction as well, but I think he'll have about 950.
And lastly, fact or fiction, Jimmy Butler leads the Heat in scoring the entire Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I think that's pretty easy to do a fact there. I don't think anybody else on that roster, especially with how banged up they are, can lead them in scoring. Jimmy had 41 last night. I'm holding off for the Heat. I still have Celtics in Game 6 to win it there, but I'm hoping the Heat can maybe force it to 7 or maybe be lucky and end it in 5, but we'll see with Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. There's Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez and Blake Schneiders. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City.